This is 3P Theory, the podcast for AEC professionals seeking to elevate their knowledge on green building strategies and practical design collaboration for sustainable mindsets, bringing you change makers, innovators, and sustainable leaders who have positively impacted the industry. It's time to get inspired, motivated, and fired up to take action towards a greener planet. Here's your host, Mike Brown.
Well, welcome, Matt. We definitely appreciate you being on the 3P Theory podcast. Looking forward to just having a discussion with you more about water efficiency and some of the opportunities for commercial buildings. Glad to have you today.
Thanks for having me. It's exciting to be on the podcast and to get to have a little chat with you about water.
Great. This is definitely a topic that's been, close to my heart, just because it's an area that I'm trying to learn more about. You know, I focus a lot on energy as it relates to building performance, but I definitely think water is an issue and obviously an opportunity where people can really maximize the potential for existing buildings and even for new construction when it comes to implementation from a design standpoint to really make that successful for building owners and managers. Even more specifically here in Texas, even with water rates being, you know, relatively cheap compared to other areas of the country, I think, you know, with the rising cost of water and things of that nature, that's going to become more and more of a challenge. But just in terms of, water health and the quality, you know, within Texas and the United States, what does that look like right now? If you were to kind of give the State of the Union address, if you would.
Sure thing. Yeah, that's a great starting point, I think. When we look at the Texas water health or the water supply, I like to refer back to the Texas Water Development Board study they put out every few years. And they're looking at our water supply potentially decreasing some over the next 50-year period. And part of that is due to a lower production output from some of our aquifers here. So that means that we're obviously using them quite a bit. And as a result, they're being overtaxed and they're probably going to produce a little bit less. The water quality itself, especially in Texas or other states in the South Southwest region, we're seeing salinity go up, which can have an impact on plant material. We're seeing some hard water issues as well in different parts of Texas, which can not only impact the soil profile, plant material, but also some of the irrigation equipment that is on site. And there are certain measures that can be done during site development, but also, you know, into an existing site to help mitigate some of those issues. But I think that the overarching theme is that water quality is probably going to keep going down, and there's going to be more intervention needed to address that as our population grows, as more water is used or demanded from municipal providers or from groundwater sources or from wastewater treatment plants providing treated effluent water for the purposes of irrigation. And some of those measures that are being taken might be, you know, injection systems. There's water monitoring systems to evaluate the quality, you know, the pH of the water. You know, we have a site in Colorado, and, you know, our home office is in Colorado, and I'm running our Texas office here. But we had a site in Colorado that's about a 900-acre property, and they're actually putting their own desalinization plant on that property, partially because that water source is high salinity. But the other reason is it was a cost driver, and they were looking at about $100 million water development cost to develop a water source for that site using traditional approach. And that, you know, that's their tap fees, their water rights, their, you know, infrastructure costs. But still, that's a surprising chunk of money for a site that's 900 acres. So you'll see more extreme measures being taken to mitigate water quality of less expensive sources because the cost of water is sort of meteoric in its rise.
Yeah, that's definitely a challenge there for sure, because, you know, I know that they've kind of raised some of the restrictions on the residential side for, you know, rainwater capture and reuse, but I mean, it's minuscule, right? And to my understanding, that hasn't really been as developed on the commercial side. So they'd be very limited in what they could do from a, you know, rainwater harvesting standpoint, stormwater management for reuse. That kind of makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen, any policies maybe in that area or other areas that are focused on that, just in terms of building resilience for buildings? I know that for example, in Austin, they've got, with their green building ordinance to be able to have the infrastructure for future purple pipe and facilities, even though that necessarily hasn't been built out from a kind of a distribution standpoint within the city. What have you seen in the industry in different parts of the country with respect to that?
Yeah, since you touched on Austin, I think I'll start there. And Austin's a great place to work in this current climate, in that they have a great focus on water. And there's a number of projects that we're doing in Austin, whether it's a high-rise commercial building or it's a more sprawling mixed-use type site. But they have a regulation or an ordinance that requires the reuse of HVAC condensate water for some other purpose on site. And a lot of times, developers and owners are looking at reusing that water for irrigation purposes. So in terms of building in some resilience, that's a great tool that's a regulatory push to help buildings be developed in a way that's using alternative sources of water. Now, condensate isn't always a huge source of water, but if you look at a high-rise type project where there's going to be a lot more condensate for a lot smaller planting area, then that can take a bigger chunk out of that total plant demand for water over the course of a year. And when you introduce things like rainwater capture from rooftops or amenity decks and things like that, then that can also bolster that alternative water supply. Those non-potable distribution systems that are, municipal wider from water districts using treated reclaimed water or treated effluent water, those are some systems that we've seen more frequently in other parts of the country. One that comes to mind is City of Irvine in California, where they have an extensive network of reclaimed water that's piped throughout their city. And the majority of their landscape there is supplied by non-potable water, which is great because they're not having to put drinking water on the plants because they've invested in that infrastructure far in advance. Now, that's happening in Arizona. It's happening in Colorado. It's happening in, more locally here in the Metroplex in Frisco and in Flower Mound and other areas. So that's a really key tool that I see in the future for offsetting our use of drinking water for irrigation purposes. Because as you have more toilets flushing and showers running and sinks being used, all that water is going to the wastewater treatment plant and has to be sent somewhere and used somewhere. What a great solution to put that on landscape material, assuming the quality, the level of treatment is producing a quality that's acceptable for that purpose. There's a couple different tiers of treatment levels in Texas, and we're typically seeing that the top tier of water being used for those landscape applications. But I think that's a great resilient type approach to addressing the irrigation demand that we're seeing across the state.
Yeah, no, I think we'll start to definitely see more and more owners, go this route voluntarily, given that there is some flexibility within the AHJ or authority, having, the open mind to be able to implement things like this, even though they may not have the infrastructure or policy in place.
Sure.
Because as you mentioned before, it's going to be more costly to try and retrofit and do that in the future as opposed to having it up front. Which makes me think about, it really makes me think about the implications of doing something like that without that city infrastructure in place yet. And even if they don't have anything on site where they're utilizing that purple pipe, how do they ensure that that system is maintained until they bring that online with the city? As they have to do an annual flush out, or what does that look like from a maintenance standpoint?
I think it's going to vary by city. If you look at a city like Frisco that's developing at a rapid pace, I don't know how long that infrastructure is sitting or precisely what they're doing to keep those pipes clean. But I would imagine that since there's not a lot of use on some of that infrastructure, and I'm just thinking about large distribution lines, underneath roads, getting to different areas of the city, I don't anticipate there being a great deal of maintenance on that. But that's not necessarily an area of my expertise, so I don't want to speak too far into that. But just knowing that there's pipe and there's valves in the ground there that are going to permit that water to flow in the future, I don't foresee there being a huge maintenance burden. But to your point, the cities like Dallas that are built, downtown Dallas, they're not going to easily put in these types of systems because it's just too costly and too disruptive to do that. So, you know, using treated effluent water from a wastewater treatment plant is not going to be a viable solution for probably a very long time in some of those areas.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. That was actually a great transition because I wanted to move into kind of understanding more about the economics of water. I know this is probably a huge topic that you all, discuss with clients very early on to really get them engaged around some of the implications of not thinking about some of this. You know, what does that look like typically? And, what are some of the, the keys to really providing buy-in for clients and owners to move forward in that direction, especially if you're talking about maybe a large scale facility or even just a normal, high-rise office building that's maybe not downtown.
Sure. And I think talking a little bit about how water is used and what's happening with the cost of water is a great primer for the developer audience. Because whether it's water being used for outdoor purposes on landscape material or water being used for indoor, it's helpful to understand what those costs are. And I think that begins that process of obtaining buy-in to high value, high performance, high resiliency type solutions for a project. And from the data that we see, water in general is the fastest rising utility cost in the country. And it's not just a gradual increase, but we're seeing it's actually accelerating in its increase of cost. And I think one of the bigger drivers in that is that most cities in the country are probably losing money on maintaining their aging water systems. Mm-hmm. And politically, it's difficult, or it has been difficult, to increase the cost of water because of how that affects the community across all levels of social class or income levels. But they're at a point now where this infrastructure is needing a lot of investment and a lot of repair. And there's growth that's causing the need for increased infrastructure. So we're seeing those water costs go up. And when we look at the outdoor water use for landscape irrigation, we're seeing on average about a 50 to 60% of municipal water being used on landscape irrigation purposes. Now, that's going to vary depending on what kind of site it is, right? If we're talking about high rises and it only has a postage stamp planter bed using water, we're not going to be using 50% of that building's water on landscape. But if you look at a city park, you're probably using nearly 100% of the water on landscape material. So that average does kind of hit in the middle of that. And it's important to think about, okay, so we know we've got expensive water. We've got a lot of water being used, at least municipal water being used for landscape purposes. How are we doing as a country with that water? Are we doing a good job with that water use? And I like to refer back to a study that we participated in after probably 2008, 2010, when that recession hit. And we looked at about 4,000 commercial sites and did an audit on them. And we did this in partnership with some different industry folks on the manufacturing side, as well as some research entities in California. And what we found was that over half the sites were using double the amount of water needed for their landscape plant material. So it's just stone cold water waste, right? And the other thing that was kind of disturbing is we looked at a lot of the native material struggles that were occurring, and the cause of death for the native plant material, I want to say, was 70% due to overwatering. So we look at the water picture on a site, for landscape at least, the water demand is really set by that landscape material. And we work with fantastic landscape architects that are choosing regionally appropriate plant material, whether it's native or adapted plants for Texas or for Arizona or for Wisconsin, wherever the project is. And that's setting that sort of baseline of water need for the site. And then once that's been set, then how water is applied, whether that's through design or what type of water it is, that's where we can really come in and have an impact on the cost savings. But at the same time, we can have conversations with the landscape architect and with the developer on that plant material selection to make sure we're minimizing that water burden for the site.
That's really interesting, you know, about the data that you all are able to capture. And I wonder if you know this, that's fine. If not, it's okay as well. If you all were able to see any trends within, you know, how those sites were managed relative to age of the building and when it was constructed, or is it just based on more so on the maintenance practices and the third party vendors that are hired to do that? Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sure those practices vary from vendor to vendor and things of that nature. And obviously if there are some things that are lacking in terms of deferred maintenance and so on and so forth, sure, that can have a huge impact. Cause I mean, you probably see it, you know, quite a bit where you walk by a site or a building and, you know, it's early in the morning or even just in the afternoon and you've got these damaged sprinkler heads that are just gushing water into the air. And I'm sure that has a lot to do with it as well, right?
It drives you crazy, doesn't it, to see that kind of water waste happening when it's preventable too. It is preventable. I don't recall there being any sort of metrics about the age of the property or the building, but there was, I mean, we did look at what the common water wasting trends were. So is it, you know, is it poorly adjusted sprinkler heads that are overspraying onto the building or onto a sidewalk? Or are there damaged heads? Are there leaks in the system? Well, the water saving features in the control systems not being utilized, all of those things contribute to the water waste or the water conservation picture for that site. So, I don't have any age specific data to share on that, but it was really more about a snapshot in time of what these sites are doing, how they're performing, and it kind of averaged out the good and the bad maintenance practices.
Gotcha. Yeah, and that kind of makes me think as well. I mean, I know that in certain jurisdictions, they have, I guess, penalties and things of that nature for water usage, especially when there are droughts and things of that nature. I mean, I can kind of almost see that happening in a non-drought situation, you know, as the infrastructure continues to age and that becomes more critical with the prices increasing. Do you feel that, you know, and maybe this is speaking too much from the policy side, whether it be state or local government, that to help with that turning point, whenever that price gets to be a little extreme, are they going to focus probably more on penalizing businesses and building owners or incentivizing? It may be a little bit of both, but where do you see that the bulk of that pressure coming from to really help with this, help with the water issue, I guess?
Sure. I think you hit the nail on the head. It's going to be a multi-pronged approach. So the very nature of water costing more is going to put it on more people's radar to want to conserve it because they don't want to have the negative impact to their pocketbook, right? But there is also, of course, the regulatory element to help keep people accountable or to encourage good design and, as a follow-up to the project completion, good maintenance practices. You know, if you look at some of the watering day restrictions that occur in the city, and, you know, in times of drought, those restrictions get more tight. And there's more enforcement of people being fined for watering on days that they're not supposed to. And that's that tends to be more targeted toward deliberate watering when they're not supposed to and not so much accidental breaks. But I wouldn't be surprised if, as this, you know, this precious resource starts to become more scarce and more costly, that there may be some additional penalties for allowing, you know, water waste to occur, even if it's not a readily obvious cause.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, and it also makes me think about one of the things that I want to provide as a resource to our listeners as well, which I've, you know, referenced a number of times at other events as well, is the ICI program that Dallas has to be able to offer a free water audit for indoor and outdoor water usage. And it's also a rebate program that offers up to $100,000 for site-specific rebates. So it's really on a first-come, first-served basis. And so it really takes a deep dive into the efficiency of the facility from a water standpoint and understanding where your opportunities are. Very similar to an energy audit for a facility. Are you familiar with this program, or have you worked with any projects that have pursued this at all?
So I've had some interaction with Dallas on their Save Dallas Water entity, which is part of the city of Dallas, not directly with the folks in the program that you just referenced, mm-hmm. but I imagine that there's some overlap there. And then also there's another group out of Frisco, which tends to be pretty progressive in their water strategies. And they're called their group is called the WaterWise group. And they also provide free outdoor irrigation audits on systems. And I mean, seeing cities prioritize that kind of a resource for not only commercial properties, but for residences mm-hmm. is, it's a really encouraging trend. And there's not, we hear a lot of cities that say, we just don't have the budget to staff those kinds of programs. And I totally get that because there's a lot of needs in a city that have to be fulfilled. But when cities are able to find a way to allocate resources to that, it's making a big impact. And, I happen to know some of the guys over at Frisco, so I can speak to their process a little bit more with a little bit more confidence. But I know that they'll, from an outdoor perspective, they're doing a full run through on whatever kind of control system is there for the irrigation system. And then they're running and inspecting every single station on that system and providing feedback about if they observe, improperly adjusted items or if there's leaks or, if there's recommendations for how to improve efficiency. Sometimes they're able to provide an estimate on how many gallons will be saved just by fixing their programming on their controller and scheduling it properly for the plant material, but also to align with the city requirements for how it should be programmed. So, commercial entities, HOAs, homeowners, they're getting equipped with the tools to better understand their system. And it's great to see that hands-on approach from the cities. And I think that on commercial sites too, these kinds of reviews are helpful, and this kind of speaks back to that idea of getting buy-in on from ownership on new projects is understanding how water use can affect property value. And when you look at how properties, especially commercial properties, are valued, are you familiar with capitalization rates, Mike?
Yes, definitely. We've used that on the energy side quite a bit.
Okay. So you're familiar with how that's valued with, it's net operating income over purchase price, right? And how there's a immediate correlation with if you increase your net operating income and you do that by reducing your O&M costs, then your purchase price or your value of the property goes up exponentially. The example I have to use is, I think multifamily right now is at a 5 or 5.5% cap rate at this snapshot in time. And, we've done the math that for every dollar of water that they save per year on an irrigation system, they increase their property value by $15 to $20.
Wow.
So that's the kind of economics of water, and that's the kind of exciting discussion to have with project developers and owners to say, hey, you're going to save money on this system in terms of water cost. If it's designed well, you can save money on the initial cost, and it's going to increase your property value, whether you plan to hold on to it for 30 years or you plan to sell it in 2 years after you finish it and your length of time of ownership has ended. So it's kind of a win-win in all of those scenarios.
Thank you for listening to 3P Theory with Mike Brown. If you like our show and want to know more, check out 3ptheory.com or please leave us a review on iTunes or SoundCloud. Join us next time for more insightful knowledge on high-performance building design.